I woke up in a great mood this morning. Anyone know why?
Yes.
You want to venture a guess?
Yes.
Actually, you're wrong. The reason I woke up in a great mood is that God has blessed me just about my whole life, that every morning I wake up with a song playing in my head. And 95% of the time, that song is a hymn from our church. Now, 5% of the time, that is something non-church related. But probably 19 days out of 20, there is a hymn that's playing on my audio soundtrack every morning when I wake up. And this morning, that hymn was Cristo San Este. It's kind of neat that the hymns are from various seasons of the year. They're not necessarily the season that we're in. And one of the reasons why I have this sort of good memory of the hymns is that I hear them year round. So I was hearing Cristo San Este and hymns from Easter when I woke up this morning. So I was in a good mood. Now, yesterday when I woke up, it was one of those 1 out of 20 days where I was hearing a non-church hymn in my head on the audio soundtrack when I woke up. And yesterday when I woke up, it was the war chant from FSU. God was preparing me for a wonderful day. And
I knew this.
So, needless to say, I'm happy on two fronts this morning. Now, yesterday, I had the great blessing to actually go to the FSU game in Tallahassee, which I have never been there before. I watched them play faithfully on TV, but yesterday was the first time that I made the pilgrimage to Tallahassee, to the stadium there, and got the experience in person. And so I'm not going to talk about the football game.
Good.
Someone said good, thank you. I'm not going to rub that in. Actually, it was a terrible game. We played terribly in all facets of the game. But we won, and that's really the only statistic that matters at the end. But I'm not going to talk about the game per se. But I want to talk about sort of the experience, because as I was watching this unfold, it really relates a lot to our Orthodox Church and how we're presenting that to everybody. Now, I went to the game with a couple of friends, one of whom was really animated. While we were watching this game, I actually was more cerebral in my sort of taking it all in. That's why I still have a voice today, and my friend probably doesn't. It was quite an experience seeing 80,000 arms going at the same time in the same direction. And there wasn't someone in the field telling everybody, okay, back, forward, back, forward. Everyone's kind of just doing it instinctively. And the whole presentation of the product was really pretty amazing. Amazing to think that probably 50,000 people from around Florida drove across the state to this little town to watch a football game. Probably the other 30,000 people who live in and around there. But probably 50,000 people went from areas far away, Tampa and maybe farther, to come and watch this football game. Everything was super choreographed, it seemed. From the pregame warm-ups, you have 100 players on each team, and they're all moving in sync. But the thing also that impressed me as I was watching this game was the activity of the players on the sidelines who were not in the game at that particular moment. They all seemed to be doing something to get ready for that moment when they were going to go in the game. So looking from the stands onto the field, I saw a couple of stationary bikes. And you think, like, what would a stationary bicycle be doing on the end of a football field? And I saw that the punter and the kicker for the team here on the U.S. side, when they were not in the game, they were riding a stationary bike almost throughout the game to kind of stay loose. So at the moment that their name was called, they were ready to go. They were warmed up and loose and ready to go. And just kind of watching them, they kind of figured when they would be needed. So you'd see them get off the bike, put on their helmet, inch near to the sideline, and then at the right moment they would be ready to go on the field. And no one had to go find them and say, like, gosh, I wonder where the kicker is, I need them right now. At the moment the coach was ready for them to go in, they were right there, ready to go in, all prepared. It was really quite an event. Now, as I was sitting there taking this all in, and again, more in a cerebral way, I'm not an FSU alum, just a fan, I'm not a fanatic, but a fan. As I was thinking this all in, I was thinking about my college football experience. I grew up in a little town outside of Los Angeles, and it was a Division III school, and we had maybe 1,300 students in the whole school. We were terrible at football. We won 5 games total in my 4 years there. For me, talking about counting the wins, we didn't count very many of them. We counted the win, but we didn't lose by more than 14 points. And not only we were interested in driving across the state to see our team, most of us who were living on campus wouldn't even stroll across our small campus to the stadium on Saturday night because the product was terrible and we didn't want to see it. In fact, most high school stadiums in Florida are bigger and better than the college stadium that I grew up in California. Now, obviously, Whittier College, a small Division III school, and Florida State are completely different animals in the sports realm. In Florida State, they're recruiting top athletes from around the country. They're pouring in a lot of money into their athletic facilities, and that's why the final product comes out so well. You can say that about the University of South Florida, the University of Florida, and LSU, and all the other big schools. They make this kind of a priority. Now, what does this have to do anything with Christianity? Well, in this morning's gospel lesson, we encountered the first recruiters for Christianity, the first disciples. Jesus found a man named Andrew, who was a disciple of John the Baptist. So he was a pious man, he was following John the Baptist, and John the Baptist, of course, being the forerunner of Christ, was telling all his followers, I am not the Christ, after me is coming the one who is greater than me. And so one day when they saw Jesus, John said to his disciples, behold the Lamb of God. And the disciples all believed. None of them said, what are you talking about? We didn't see this coming. John had been preparing his followers. This is what is coming. And so the day he said, behold the Lamb of God. Andrew left the company of John and went right to Jesus. He had been expecting him. And Jesus looked at him and said, who are you seeking? And he said, he called him Rabbi, teacher. Where are you from? Where are you going? What is your story? And Jesus invited him with two words. Come and see. Come and see. Andrew gave him. Come and see. And so Andrew was very enamored with this. He went and he saw. He liked what he saw. And he went and he found his brother, Simon. And he said, Simon, you come and see. So he brought him to Jesus. And Jesus said, you are Simon. I'm going to call you Peter. And you are going to be one of my disciples. And eventually Peter would become the leader of the disciples, the rock of the church. And the next day, Jesus encountered another man named Philip. And he invited him and said, come and see. And Philip again was enamored with what Jesus was saying in his message. He went and found his friend Nathanael. He said, Nathanael, you come and see. Now Nathanael was a little more skeptical. Nathanael said, where is this man coming from? And Philip said, this is from Nazareth. And Nathanael said, can anything good come out of Nazareth? And to put his mind at ease, Philip said, you come and see. You come and see that something good has come out of Nazareth. This is the Messiah. This is the Christ. And at the end, the disciples looked at Jesus, encountering him only for a few hours. And they were so enamored with his message, they immediately confessed, you are the Christ. You are the King of Israel. And Jesus said to Nathanael, one of the disciples who said that, because I saw you under a fig tree and said, come and see me, this is why you believe, you will see much greater things than this. So, people are asking now, in this day and age, does anything good come from the church? Can anything good come from there? And our answer is supposed to be, come and see what good is coming from our church. Come and see. Come and see what? Like my friend a few days ago, said, I have an extra ticket to go to the FSU game. Come and see. And I said, I wasn't planning on doing this a week ago. If you asked me a week ago, what am I going to do Saturday? I would have said I would have sit at home and watch the game on my TV. But my friend said, come and see what this is all about. And so I'm curious. So I went and I saw, and I was not disappointed. It was a nice product that I saw. Now, if I invited my friend and said, let's come across the United States, let's take a plane over to Los Angeles, and let's go see my Division III college play, my friend would have been disappointed. He would say, you brought me all the way across the country to see this? This is terrible. I'm wasting my money and my time coming over here. Because the product is not good. And so what does this have to do with the church? We are supposed to be apostles. We are supposed to be disciples like Andrew and Peter and Philip and Nathaniel. We're supposed to go out and find people and say, come and see what we have. And who are the kind of people we're supposed to find? We're supposed to find people who are sad. We're supposed to find people who are in need. We're even supposed to find people who are happy. And tell them, you want to find real happiness, real joy, come and see what real joy is. Real joy is not 80,000 hands moving at the same time like this. Real joy is people bowing their heads and offering up petitions and prayers to God in unison. That is a beautiful thing. That is heaven on earth. That is hope where there is no hope. Come and see people who witness for their faith. Come and see people who have something to give to those that are in need, whether it's the boxes of hope, or a toy drive, or a prayer for someone who's in need. I had a beautiful conversation with Anastasia on Thursday, on Thanksgiving. I was praying and I was thinking about the things that I'm thankful for, and I said, I'm thankful that I have great health, more or less. And I said, let me call Anastasia, because Anastasia, you know, we are praying for her, for you, in her battle with cancer. And I called her up and I said, happy Thanksgiving. And I'm planning, I put it in my date book already to call you next Thanksgiving. Make that a yearly thing, to thank God for your continued good health. And Anastasia, you are inspiring to me because you're so positive in your outlook. So many people just kind of take a knee and they fold up, and you're so positive. People should come and see that. Not just the people in our community, but other people. People who are down in their luck should come and see that there's hope here. That they have, there's Christ here. Come and see that we're friendly people, that we have these beautiful Bible studies. There's lots of things to come and see. Now this week and next Sunday, we face each of us a decision. Each of us faces a decision this week that we're going to make next Sunday. And that is, what are we going to give to our church so that there's something for people to come and see? Whether it's the person next to you, the pews, or the person that you work next to that doesn't even know our church. I'm not especially enamored with talking about stewardship. Most people think stewardship is money and priests are fundraising, and why do I want to come and see that? I want to come and see a beautiful service, hear a beautiful choir. I don't want to hear somebody begging for things. I don't want to come and see that either. So what I want to do next Sunday, and we don't have a full church today, it's pretty full, and that's pretty good for Thanksgiving weekend. But what I want to see is, I want to see everybody who's in church today to bring their form next week and turn it in. You don't have to bring a check, you just bring your form. This is what I want to give to the church. This is what I want people to come and see. And call somebody that's not here today. We all have friends that are not here today because of the weekend. Call one friend this week and say, you bring your form too. I'm bringing mine, you bring yours. The way that Philip found Nathaniel, said, you come and see. Call your friends and say, please come and bring your form. All right? And why do we need these forms? Because this is how we pay our bills. And this is how we run our ministries. People come and they offer their time, their talent, and their treasure, and this is how we pay the bills. Now, I had sort of a brass tacks conversation with someone the other day, and that is this. For whatever reason, years ago, they decided to build that school building back there, and we currently have a loan of $1.3 million on that building. That was before my time. And we're not going to debate whether we should have built it or we shouldn't have, but we built it, we have a $1.3 million mortgage, now to pay. Now, if we get to the point where our stewardship is large, we will take our festival, and we'll take our festival out of the budget, and we'll use the festival proceeds to pay down the loan, which will then give us freedom to do more ministries. But if we are sort of scraping along little by little with the stewardship, then the festival money has to stay in the budget, and that $1.3 million loan gets paid off very slowly for many, many years, like 20 years. All right, so the first step is raise the stewardship, pass our goal of 470, back the festival out of the budget, pay down the loan, and then enjoy freedom to have ministries that give more and more people a reason to come and see. Right? So I want you to prayerfully, and I emphasize prayerfully, consider your stewardship this week. I already got one pledge that went up $10,000 last week. Someone brought in a pledge that's not going to be here next week. And they said, this is a sacrificial gift, Father, because I want to give something. I want people to come and see what we have. So please give sacrificially, generously, prayerfully. Let's make that goal of 470. Let's make it quick. Let's not take all year to do it. Let's make it quick. If everybody here brings a four next week, that's 150 forms we have. And if everybody calls a friend, that's 300 forms. So let's make the budget. Let's exceed the stewardship. Let's pull the loan. Let's pull the festival out of the budget. Let's pay off the loan. And let's get to the business of the church so that we have a product that looks like the one I saw yesterday, not the one that I went to college with. So that people are going to come from near and far, come and see the beautiful things that we have. And the beautiful thing that we have is not our stewardship drive. It's everything but that. It's all the ministries that we have. And the stewardship is what makes the ministries. The stewardship is what pays the light bill. The stewardship is what makes all these things possible that we want people to come and see. So get the stewardship right. Let's get the money situation right. Let's invite people to come and see what our church is all about. And come and see Christ in action, working miracles in the lives of many of our parishioners, bringing hope where there is strife, bringing joy where there is sadness, bringing faith where there is doubt, and bringing confidence. This is the church. Thank you for sharing a beautiful morning this morning. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving. I give thanks to God, as I said the other night, for everybody in this parish. My life is much more rich because I know each of you. So thank you for being here. And God bless you. May we spend many Thanksgivings together. May we spend them in health and happiness. Amen.